Hello, and welcome to Community Conversations. These are pre-recorded interviews brought to you each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. on KRFY. Because of ongoing concerns about the COVID pandemic, we are not able to be in the studio doing live broadcast interviews right now. But we are still dedicated to recording and bringing to you topics of local and current interest, highlighting voices from our community. For Community Conversations, we are using phones and web-based technology so that participants can be recorded remotely. Please bear with us if there are any gaps or hiccups that might be caused by a slow or unstable phone or internet connection. Also, keep in mind that because these interviews are recorded, information may change between the time of this recording and the time that you hear it broadcast. Thank you for joining us for today's Community Conversation on KRFY 88.5 FM, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. Now grab a cup of coffee, sit back and enjoy some more of Adventure Number 8 by Jim Chappelle, and then we'll get on with today's show. Good morning, and welcome to today's Community Conversations, hosted by myself, Phil Huff, and Julie Calamine. Good morning, Julie.
Well, good morning, Phil. What's new in your world?
Well, the sun's out, and the weeds are growing, and so I've got a full weekend of yard work ahead, but I'll bet you're going fishing.
Well, I've just been fishing, so I'm not going fishing, but I am going to try and get out in this nice weather before it turns cool again. So we've got to enjoy the sun while we have it this summer.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. It's almost July. Here we are. So today's topic is very well suited to summer. We're going to be talking about water quality and all kinds of things related to the lake's health with the Lake Pendere Waterkeepers. On the show with us this morning, we have Steve Holt, Executive Director, and Travis Dixon, the new Associate Director. Welcome to the show.
Hello. How's it going?
Thank you, Steve. And Travis, let's hear your voice.
This is my voice.
All right.
I'm very happy to be here, so thank you for having me.
We want to find out all about Travis and your new position. But first, Steve, why don't we start with, you're the founder, one of the founders of the Waterkeepers, and it's now about 10 years old.
Give us 11 years old.
Time flies. Give us an overview. Tell us about the history, the mission, how you got inspired to start it up, and where things are going.
Well, it started in, our work really started in 2006. When the state appropriated $12 million to combat Eurasian water milfoil in the lake and had put a lot of effort into applying a lot of aquatic herbicides. The community, really it angered a lot of the community around that time when we rallied, and sort of essentially the Lake Pendere Waterkeeper was sort of born out of that particular issue. You know, since that time, we broadened our scope and our mission. We affiliated ourselves, of course, with the Waterkeeper Alliance, which is a national organization and worldwide, actually. And so we've taken on, fossil fuel by rail. We look at all the wastewater permits. We're working on stormwater. So we've got a myriad of issues that we're working on. And I think we've come a long way, in our 11 years, just in terms of our sophistication and the kind of things that we're accomplishing. So I'm myself, and I know the other board members, we have two other board members that have been here from its inception. So I'm real pleased with what's going on, but there are also multiple threats that we're also looking at all the time. And so that, you know, makes us nervous.
Mm-hmm. Steve, you're, of course, you and the organization are local, you're a regional organization, and you've alluded to the fact that it is a national and international organization. How would you say you're similar and how would you say you're different from other waterkeepers?
I think we're similar in a lot of ways. We have, well, one, when you're affiliated with the Waterkeeper Alliance, there are 13 sort of quality standards that you need to maintain to be able to hold on to essentially the branding. And so we all have, you know, full-time employees. We all have vessels to get out on the watercraft. We all attend a national conference. And so there's a list of things that really bind us together. As far as the water, you know, there's a big misnomer that somehow we get funded, you know, by the Waterkeeper Alliance. And I just want to let everybody know that it's actually completely the opposite. You know, we sort of have to pay our dues. We do go to a conference, which is very inspiring. You know, you go to these conferences and you get to be around all of the other 300 waterkeepers that are working around the world. And it's just amazing to see the type of work that they're really doing and hear their stories. And so there's a lot of conversation that happens at those conferences. And then we can also support each other throughout the course of the year through email communication. We have a Western Regional Zoom meetings now. And so, I'm really happy to be associated with them. It's been great.
It's really been a wonderful growth to watch happen, and things have been changing the last year or two. Tell us a little bit about how the organization's grown and some of the changes that have taken place.
Well, as many of you know, we had a big staff turnover this last fall. I had been president of the board, since 2009, and we lost our executive director, Shannon Williamson, who, contributed to the organization greatly. You know, she was the one who really got our signature water quality monitoring program up and developed a relationship with DEQ, whereby which our monitoring program is got a QAP, which is sort of a quality assurance program. Unfortunately, when Shannon left, we lost one of our employees to DEQ, who's now working down with the department, which Chantilly Higby, and then we lost a communications director. So there we were really in the fall with nobody. And it was frightening times, you know. There was a lot of uncertainty at that time as to what was gonna happen. Subsequently, I ended up stepping in as interim executive director. We had a part-time person, Carolyn Knack, who came in for 6 months and just sort of helped, get the wheels turning again. And she was great. She ended up taking a position with the Forest Service for this summer, which was her dream job. And then we were fortunate enough to find Travis. And, he had been working our water quality monitoring program for the last couple of years. And he's definitely got the science qualifications that are very helpful to have within the organization. So, so here we are rolling. Feels good.
Well, good. That's a great segue into learning more about Travis. Travis, will you tell us a bit about yourself, your background, how you came to be the most qualified person to be the Sandpoint Waterkeeper?
Sure, I'd love to. I grew up in Sagal, Idaho, in the 80s, long before it was the ice war that it is today, unfortunately. I graduated from Sandpoint High School in 1998, and then shortly after, I traveled around chasing an education. I started school down in Colorado, transferred up to University of Idaho, did an exchange program to Bellingham, Washington at Western, and then back to U of I. So I really feel like I branched out a lot and got a diverse education, and all of that was in the environmental sciences. After I got a master's degree at University of Idaho, I went into the workforce. Largely what I was doing was writing environmental impact statements for large developments and whatnot. So that was a huge education as well, as far as not only how these kind of assessments are done, but also what really drove me as far as the environmental process and whatnot. So I realized working in that sector wasn't exactly fulfilling to my soul. So I actually went back to school, worked with a professor up in Canada at University of British Columbia, and really fell into limnological studies. And so from there, got the PhD, came home, and I was actually, my first job when I came back to Sandpoint was working with J.L. Patterson and Associates, which were doing some of the wetland delineations and permitting for the BNSF railway that's going across Lake Pend'Oreille right now. So it's very interesting now for me to be on this side of things, monitoring the lake and whatnot, versus, you know, writing the permits for more development in the area. So I feel very, very grateful to be in the position that I am right now. And then just a bit more, when I did move home and I was writing those permits for J.L. Patterson, I was really trying to branch out and do more meaningful work. And that's when I found Lake Pend'Oreille Waterkeeper. I viewed the programs here as, community service. These programs are amazing. You guys already touched on what Shannon had built here, and it's remarkable. The contacts that she established, the work that she put into this program. And now, you know, I'm still working largely with the same volunteers that signed up with her. This is a community science program for the people, by the people, where, you know, the local community is largely funding this program. Local community members are doing the sample collections, and it's a beautiful thing to be able to report those results back to the community of Sandpoint, who are paying for it and doing it.
So we want to delve into the program some, but let's finish covering the range of things that you're going to be doing for the waterkeepers and how that aligns with the work Steve's doing and builds on the work Shannon did. What's your main focus?
I'm very new to this program, so I know that my main focus is going to change through the year as, you know, different things are coming up. But right now it is the lake quality monitoring program. So largely working with all those volunteers, coordinating samples, and then doing a bit of data analysis, and then again, making those results available to the public, which I invite anybody listening right now to visit our website and check out some of the graphs on the website that are explaining the cleanliness of our lake.
That's probably a good way to segue into the programs. Let's talk a little bit more about the lake quality monitoring program. For those listeners who might be for the first time exposed to it, give us an overview of what it's all about.
It's all about just monitoring the quality of the lake. So as everybody knows, anything that happens in the surrounding lands of Lake Pend'Oreille will eventually end up in Lake Pend'Oreille. And so the study design that's been established is to monitor now 14 different sites around the near shore environment of Lake Pend'Oreille. And we're really just looking for signs of pollution, whether it be nutrient loading or actual chemicals from maybe industry processes. And so from those sampling events, we get the data, and which will give us an indication if there's some kind of foul play or whatnot going on out there. So we're just basically monitoring and patrolling.
And there are certain parameters that we follow there. And just as an example, some of the benefits that have come from that, you know, several years back, we had gotten some unfavorable readings over in the Boyer Slough area. For the most part, I think, you know, we'd like to report that the water quality of Lake Pend'Oreille is great, but there are significant threats coming, and there are some problem areas, and Boyer Slough turned out to be one of them. And so due to the data that we collected, we were able to inform DEQ of the results of the test. They were certainly alarmed, and actually implemented their own monitoring program sort of at that time. And from the data that they collected, they are now writing a TMDL for that particular area, which is a total maximum daily load of a certain, you know, nutrient or phosphorus or something like that that goes into it. And that is going to have a direct effect on the Ponderay Sewer District's wastewater treatment permit. Their facility is right adjacent to Boyer Slough. And so our data is really, you know, helping DEQ negotiate with the EPA about wastewater treatment permits. And we have the same thing happening with the city of Sandpoint, because we monitor right outside their outfall. They have a new permit. As you know, they have a new wastewater treatment facility planned here in the next like 5 years. So we're really able now to start using our data.
That's wonderful. So you've already told us that there have been some positive results from the water quality monitoring program, but I'd like to hear a little bit more about how it exactly happens. How do volunteers get to become water quality monitors? How does that process happen?
Mainly they just need to show some interest. Once they have the interest, we can train them on everything that they need to know as far as going out there and performing the tasks that we do. So basically, through DEQ, we've established a protocol, a training protocol for all these volunteers. So that just ensures that all of the samples are being collected properly. So we have faith in those results that we can actually use that data when DEQ is trying to, you know, enforce a policy or a regulation. So through that, we hold an orientation program with our volunteers, and we train them on how to work our equipment, how to do aseptic techniques so they're not contaminating the samples when they're taking them, and how to handle them. It's very straightforward, and we seem to get a lot of good feedback from our volunteers as far as the enjoyment that they get from it, and they see the value in what they're doing.
So you're testing for all forms of pollution, total maximum daily load, and reliant on volunteers. Have there been changes to the testing protocols or things you're looking for over the last 2 years? How's the program transformed at all over recent years, if any?
I can take a little bit of that, and I'll have Travis finish up. I think that primarily the program is intact as it was. This year, we've been working closely with DEQ. We're actually going to be applying for a 319 grant from them to continue and expand on our water quality monitoring program, and then expand our stormwater program, which DEQ is encouraging us to do. So in the conversation with them, they had suggested a couple of minor changes with regards to what we're testing. I'll let Travis explain that. The way we are testing our dissolved oxygen now, we've gotten a new meter that eliminates some of the testing. Basically, our volunteers are going out. As Travis said, there's 14 sites. They go out once a month on a Tuesday, rain or shine, in their vessel, right? They do a certain amount of the tests right on their vessel, and then they bring samples back to us that we test some here and out, and then we ship some down to a lab down in Coeur d'Alene. And so I'll let Travis sort of explain a little bit of the technical things that we've shifted.
Sure, yeah, and Phil, I just wanted to correct you just real quickly. You said that we sample for all different kinds of pollutants, but unfortunately, we don't have the money and the resources to test for everything. So mainly what we do is we've picked a handful of parameters that give us clues or hints at some malplay. So basically, you know, some phosphorus and nitrogen we sample for. Those are just big indicators. If those things start to change in our water body, then we're going to expect major changes, you know, in the negative impact to negatively impact our lake. So we do things like that, dissolved oxygen, orthophosphorus, and some coliform sampling as well. So really what we're doing is we're just looking for signs of pollution. That's mainly what we do in our near shore waters for those 15 sites. But Steve mentioned our stormwater monitoring. Now there we do expand our sampling a bit and we look for more pollutants per se. So there we can we can kind of hone in on basically what's going on in the surrounding lands and what's being flooded into our water from there. So once we get those results, we could really start to fine tune what it is that we're looking for, or what's coming in.
It sounds like year to year, though, you've been monitoring for the same things. So you have some good baseline data that you're able to add to this year.
Yes.
Good. And so I'm curious, as it's impacted so many different nonprofits and so many different municipalities and organizations, the COVID pandemic, is that impacting your ability to recruit, train, and deploy volunteers to continue the robustness of the programs?
It didn't seem as though we were, it affected the volunteers at all. You know, I mean, people were, at the time we did our training, I think they were anxious to get out. You know, we practiced our wearing the masks and social distancing. And, you know, for us, you know, even on a funding level, we're not even really quite sure how that's going to affect people's, you know, donations, you know, throughout the course of this next year. I don't know if any of us know the answer to that. And so we sort of got our fingers crossed there.
Yeah, as far as the COVID goes with our volunteers, that's the beauty of the work, the nature of the work that we do is we get to be outside. So during the orientations programs and whatnot, the COVID didn't deter too many of our volunteers from coming out and getting that training. But of course, it could affect through other aspects of the program.
Sure. The volunteers were probably happy to get out and have something to do. I know everybody I talked to is a little bit bored and looking for something interesting to do. I'd like to circle back to the monitoring what chemicals and pollutants you're testing for. And as we all know, Lake Coeur d'Alene has heavy metal issues. Is that something that is a chemical of concern or of concern for Lake Pendere?
That's a very tough question. As it is right now, we do not test for any of those metals, heavy metals or trace metals in our samples.
So we also don't have the mining issue there. You know, you have, you know, a huge mine that's been, you know, polluting Lake Coeur d'Alene for, you know, a number of years. We don't have that. In terms of some of the things that we do test for, as you know, we have, off of Boyer, there's the old historic pole yard there. This is one of the more alarming things that we've discovered in the last few years. And that from that pole yard, we have tested an outfall, which is just south of the chamber building. It goes out into Sand Creek. We monitored there for like the last 3.5 years. And on multiple occasions, we have gotten big hits of pentachlorophenol, which is the chemical they use to treat the poles there in the yard. They don't do it anymore, but that's a contaminated site. It's been flagged, and we need to keep our eye on it.
That's for sure. And I think it would be useful for us to take a moment for listeners to understand point source pollution versus non-point source pollution. Would one of you address that?
Sure. Point source comes out of one specific point. That's basically the gist of that. Non-point could be something like if it's contaminating your whole aquifer and it's just seeping through the ground, that's going to be your non-point. But if it's coming from one specific drainage point, point source.
That's the difference. Oh, well, I'll just continue. And then, so question that I have you learned anything about the significance of point source pollution versus non-point source pollution in Lake Pendere, which I know is very clean for the most part?
I don't think on the point source pollution, not much, because those are basically the wastewater treatment outfalls. And each one of those outfalls or each one of those municipalities is responsible for sort of monitoring on a daily basis and then reporting any sort of violations that they have. We do monitor the city of Sandpoint wastewater treatment outfall just downstream from it, and we haven't found any significant problems there.
Good. Excellent. So lots of good work, and there's so much more that the Lake Pendere Waterkeepers does that we should turn a little bit of attention to the general education programs that you all have going on. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, our Lake Model Program, which is a program that we've been doing for, I'm getting old, I can't remember. Maybe it's like 5 or 6, 7 years, something like that, where we go into the elementary schools, primarily fifth grade classrooms is what we targeted. And we have an aquarium that we have set up that's sort of a section cut through the lake. And we basically teach the kids lake ecology by building a lake from the bottom up. We fill it up with water. We put some plants in there. We introduce some fish that we keep alive here in the office. And then we introduce some pollutants. So through this sort of hands-on model, we've been able to create a successful educational program for the elementary schools. We were right in the throes of expanding and creating what we're calling a youth ambassador program, which is working with John Hastings at the high school, getting some of his AP students to actually learn how to teach the Lake Model program to fifth graders. So we were really excited about that. And then also monitor, help bring high school students out onto the boat and sort of teach them how to do water quality monitoring, testing, and then also bring them into the office and show them what happens with the data when we receive it and how we transfer that data from the report to the website and how we store it. So we're really trying to expand that. We hope then all of a sudden, the whole world blew up and that particular program kind of went with it. But we hope to pick that up, next year and are working towards that.
That's admirable goal, and so many things we don't know about how COVID's going to impact the educational experience, whether it's in the classroom, and if so, if it's reduced size, and how restricted outings are. But good luck as we go forward through finding a model that makes that work. It's important stuff.
Education. Yeah, and in addition to that, I think what this whole pandemic has brought to us, and here we are doing this radio interview, by Zoom, is that we can do more of this type of communication and training. And so I believe that we're going to get some funding this year to actually come up with a whole video series where we can actually do a demonstration of the lake model, get that into the more classes than we'd be able to get to if we had to be there in person, and trying to create some other educational programs through sort of video training. It was unfortunate. We also run a watershed discovery camp usually in the summer. And, we just felt like it wasn't socially responsible for us to be holding that camp this year. But, we plan on continuing to do that as well in the future.
I don't suppose winter camp on the lake would work as well.
Not quite. I appreciate the attempt.
Hopefully by summer 21, we can all get back to those experiences. Tell us about what else is in the offing. In the fall, there's usually a pretty large water summit. Is that on tap for this year?
Yeah, water summit. We're excited about the water summit this year. We're kind of calling it the Water Summit State of the Lake event. And, last year we brought some people in from all over the nation, which was great. Talked about a lot of, high-tech, new industry, things that are sort of happening out there with water quality. But this year we kind of wanted to stay home a little bit and just sort of hone in on giving some information to the public about a lot of different aspects regarding what's happening with our lake here. It'll give us a great opportunity to really go through our water quality monitoring data and really boil it down for people so that they can understand the kind of work that we're doing. I've got a guy coming from the Department of Environmental Quality who's talking about some drinking water protection measures that the city is undertaking currently. We're going to get some other local organizations to come and really just talk about our lake and get it down to a one-night event. And I think that happens on the 26th of September, and the specific time we'll let everybody know. But yeah, that's going to be happening. We're really excited about that.
Something to look forward to. On our list of things to talk about is spill or contamination reporting. And I imagine folks could call DEQ, but they could also contact you. And how would they do that? And what might people look for?
Okay, so that's a great question. Thank you very much for that one. I think we're just in the process now of updating our website as far as contact points in case of a spill event. But of course, if there's any chance of danger, risk, please contact the Sheriff's Department and the Fire Department. They'll be your first points of contact there. After that, it could be us. We definitely want to hear about any issues going on out there so we can continue to monitor them if that's what's needed. And then one other point I wanted to say about that is a lot of these releases that I presume are happening on the lake aren't something that's, driven by industry or whatnot, but maybe just private citizens out there with their boats. And each time they fill up their gas tank, potentially there's a little bit of every boater out there is practicing their best management practices, and hopefully they have a little spill kit on their boat, because that's going to be the first line of defense that we have against something that most people might think is pretty minimal and not a very big deal. But of course, it's cumulative. All those spills add up to a pretty big problem eventually. So we just want to make sure that boaters are being responsible and hopefully have some kind of prepared program or preparedness for themselves.
I think it's good to know that the public has a place to go to report spills and contamination. I'm wondering if there's other information that if individuals find that might also be useful. I know the roots of the organization, pardon the pun, came from work on invasive species. If someone out on the lake, a property owner or someone boating, observes an infestation of an invasive species, is that something that you'd be interested in hearing more about?
Absolutely. And then through those kind of reports, we would end up working with Department of Environmental Quality and really hashing out a plan to go forward with something like that. They really are the agency that we report to, because they're the ones with the teeth that could really enforce policy and regulation based on the data that we can collect.
Yeah, and having said that, go ahead, Julie.
Oh, okay. We'll come back to you in a moment, Steve. But we've talked about education for fifth graders and education programs and discovery camp, et cetera. But I have to assume that inadvertent pollution would be coming from homeowners, possibly, since we're not talking about point source pollution. Is there a good source for adults to go to if they would like to learn more about how to keep the water around them safe and clean?
Absolutely, yeah. The Lakes Commission puts out a great pamphlet on lakefront property owner fertilization use and that kind of thing. And it's really a good source of information there. I wanted to just like circle back if I could for a second, because when we talked about, what is somebody gonna do if they see something. And I just wanted to tell you a little story. A friend of ours, Phil, you may know, Phil Longden, over in Hope, was kayaking along the shore over there and noticed that there was like some severe erosion that was happening on the embankment right below where the train was going. And he sent me some photos. He said he had talked to Montana Rail Link, who actually has that particular rail line there, and he wasn't getting anywhere. And so he reached out to us, and I was able to actually speak with Montana Rail Link, who informed me that they were having a trouble getting a permit from the Department of Lands. And I thought that was kind of weird, because I get these like riprap permits that come across my computer like almost daily. And so then I called the Department of Lands, and they were like, no, it's not going to be a problem to get a permit. Next thing you know, we kind of put those two agencies sort of together. And the next thing you know, we got a permit and it's fixed, right? And so I just wanted to tell that story because you, you know, the citizens of Bonner County are our eyes, right? We can't be everywhere on this lake, but, you know, we'll sure try hard to get these things resolved when somebody brings it to our attention.
That's a great point to remind listeners that the eyes and ears are the people out there, and the waterkeepers can provide the link to make things happen. And, you brought up a couple of things that we should spend a little bit of time on. You mentioned at the beginning, and here again, your work on some of the rail issues. That might be good to delve into a little bit. And then, of course, the question of erosion and how that plays into the focuses of the Lake Monterey waterkeepers.
Yeah, well, you know, the rail bridge, you know, unfortunately for us, we didn't really get what we wanted out of that. You know, we wanted a real thorough environmental review of that particular project. And as you can see right now, they're building it, right? And so since they started construction, other than us talking about setting up another monitoring station and trying to make sure that they're not digging up some toxic sediment as they're driving their piles, we haven't really advocated for additional review. I feel it's over, really, right? And as far as the erosion, Phil, we really haven't dove into that much. Most of the erosion, if any, that happens on the lake happens because of the fluctuating lake level. And lake level is such a complicated process to decide when you have the Army Corps, you know, the Lakes Commission, that's their big issue. And we just haven't had the resources to really been involved in lake level management.
That is a big topic, and we've explored it with some other guests, and I think delved into that, and I'm sure will in the future, as it is an ever-present topic. And you mentioned some really distinct actions that people can take from observing the potential erosion of the railway line. I know there have been other erosion impacts on infrastructure like that, and so it sounds like that's useful information for folks to report to you, that something that you can help be an intermediary on.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that story I just told about, you know, the erosion that happened on the bank near the rail line is a classic example. You know, anything significant like that that needs immediate repair, you know, we need to know about, especially if there's some sort of transportation system like directly above it. I mean,
So as we wind down, tell us a little bit about where the organization's heading. What do the next 11 years look like?
Oh, man, clean water. Clean water. We're going to get this thing cleaned up. 11 years, that's, well, it's hard to hope I'm around that long. Yeah. No, I think that the goal, my goal with this organization has always been for us not to need a waterkeeper. You know, we should all be water keepers. We should all be the eyes. We should, be the ones that are down there sort of, you know, bringing people together, right, over this wonderful resource that we have.
Steve, it sounds like your goal is to work yourself out of a job. How does Travis feel about that as you're the new installed water keeper? Any thoughts?
I'm okay with it. If we can get to that state where everybody's self-monitoring and I think that's just a great idea. I'm all for it.
Okay. Well, that's good.
I was just going to say, Phil, unless you have other thoughts, I was going to ask these guys, Steve and Travis, for their closing thoughts and to repeat their contact information.
Sure. I guess I'd really like to start by thanking all the volunteers that are affiliated with Lake Ponderay Waterkeeper, from the samplers to people who come in and help with data management or website design. It's incredible. The expertise that are out there in our community and the willingness for those people to step up and help a nonprofit is remarkable. So I just really want to thank those people, and not just the Lake Ponderay volunteers, but all the volunteers out there. You guys really make this whole thing work. So thank you.
And so if somebody wants to volunteer, what's the best way for them to find out more information and sign up?
There's our website, lpow.org, and there's always a friendly stop by the office. I know COVID's going on and we are practicing social distancing, but if you want to come and stand in our doorway, we can have a quick conversation about what your interests are and how you fit into Lake Pend'Oreille Waterkeeper.
There's also a good old-fashioned telephone, 208-597-7188.
Very
and,
good.
And I just thought I'd throw that in there. I also wanted to just point out real quickly that we've had some our website has been revamped, and I think it is, you know, we were under the guidance of a volunteer, local community volunteer. He did a great job. We put a couple of cool pages I wanted to mention there. One, we put this page up there that's sort of the history of Lake Pend'Oreille. So if you want to know a little bit about the history and how it was created and ice age floods and all that, you can go to our website and hone in on that. Carolyn connected that before she went off to the Forest Service. Really cool. And then we also have a swim guide for, you know, tourists who are like rolling through, who it turns out our water temperature page is the most visited page on our website. And I think it's because people are trying to figure out, you know, if they're ready to swim yet or not. So there's this really cool swim guide. And yeah, no, I just want to, you know, echo Travis's sentiment there a little bit about just throwing some appreciation out to, you know, our local community for supporting us. You know, we wouldn't be here. And, you know, in terms of memberships, you know, we really, you know, as any nonprofit, value memberships. Ours started at $25, right? We've created a sustaining membership program last year and have gotten some people who are just donating like $10 a month, right? This comes right out of there. And that has added up, and it's really been great for us. So if there are any local community members out there who are willing to just spend, you know, minor amounts of money on a monthly basis, we really appreciate that. So if you're looking to get a hold of us, again, lpow.org, phone number 208-597-7188, and I can't thank you enough for having us on.
Thank you, guys.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for coming on the show today, Steve, Travis. It's been great. If there's breaking news or updates to be had, we'll have to have you on back at the end of the season, maybe just before the water summit.
That'd be great. Yeah.
All right, and this concludes our KRFY Community Conversations for June 30th, 2020. Thank you, our guests, and thank you, my co-host, Phil. And with that, I hope everyone has a great week.